have children who developed this innate lack of trust in their parents, in mm-hmm. their caregivers, because their body remembers, caregivers don't help me. Mm-hmm. Caregivers do not meet my needs. Mm-hmm. And in fact, sometimes caregivers might have been the one holding the child down mm-hmm. in a hospital bed
yes.
while the procedures it's were happening. Being done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Haley. I'm a child and family therapist and family coach at Arizona Family Counseling.
Hi, my name is Jenny Delcourt, and I'm the clinical supervisor and a child and family therapist here at Arizona Family Counseling, a ministry of Christian family care.
Awesome. So, Jenny, you and I met, it was probably a couple months ago now, mm-hmm. and we talked about EMDR, which is a common therapy approach to help with trauma. And so from that topic, we kind of were inspired to add another portion mm-hmm. to that, specifically talking about medical trauma and maybe even some preverbal trauma. So you were going to kind of today explain to us what medical trauma is and just kind of dive into a topic that a lot of parents might feel like they have experienced, but maybe it hasn't been explained to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're just going to take a couple minutes to talk about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me back again. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart and that I've had personal experience with my own children. So I'm really excited today to talk about this. Medical trauma is interesting in that in some ways the effects and the presentation of medical trauma is very similar to all types of trauma.
Sure.
One of the things that I've noticed with working with medical trauma as a therapist is that it's sometimes hard to pinpoint. You know, we have these symptoms and we have these issues going on, but it's very confusing sometimes to figure out what is that from.
Yeah.
You know, there's when we think about our children that we have in foster care who have been adopted from foster care, we can look back on their history and say, okay, well, they were removed from their original family because of this trauma,
right.
this neglect, this abuse, that's trauma. That, and we can draw a linear line there from what they experienced to what they're experiencing
sure.
now. It's really simple.
Right.
But then when you take a look at a child with medical trauma, mm-hmm. it gets a little bit hazier. It's
right.
a little bit more confusing sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to figure out, well, yeah, they had a surgery when they were a year old. The surgery fixed this horrible thing that they had.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, right? Like,
yeah.
that's a positive thing. This was yeah. a positive effect in their life. That's not trauma.
Right.
But that's trauma.
Yeah.
And so we want to talk a little bit about that today, about that phenomenon, about how something that really probably was necessary, medically necessary, needed to occur for the quality of life of this child.
Right.
But was very damaging psychologically to them.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that today.
No, and I think that's so good. And again, I think something that maybe people have never thought of before, and mm-hmm. before we started filming, you and I were just talking a little bit about this topic, and, you know, I mentioned meeting and knowing lots of people who have little babies in their, mm-hmm. you know, household, or maybe not babies anymore, but when they were babies, they were in the NICU, and they maybe had maybe even an outpatient procedure, even maybe their bilirubin count wasn't where it was supposed yep. to be, and they were put under the blue lights, and now that their kids are older, they're starting to see that they're maybe more anxious, or they have some maybe irrational fears, or mm-hmm. we're just kind of starting to see some of these big emotions surface, and parents are like, where is this coming from? It's hard to mm-hmm. think that something that happened when they're a baby that they can't cognitively remember would yeah. be the source or of what we're seeing. And so you're going to kind of talk about that a little bit of some sources of the medical trauma.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think medical trauma, when you boil down kind of the definition of medical trauma, it is some kind of medical procedure, mm-hmm. something that happens within a medical capacity that usually is definitely for the betterment of this child's
right.
life and their quality of life, their physical well-being, but that through whatever the procedure was or the experience was, caused pain
mm-hmm.
or sickness. And that's the process that creates the psychological damage and the traumatization of the child. So thinking about some of the common sources of medical trauma that we see, for instance, you know, my son was born very prematurely. Mm-hmm. He was born 8 weeks premature, and he was very small for gestational age, even
yeah.
at 32 weeks.
Yeah.
And he was hospitalized in the NICU for 7.5 weeks and had all kinds of things, all kinds of procedures done mm-hmm. to him. He was connected to all kinds of machines. He was on a ventilator for yeah. quite a while. So he had all sorts of sources of medical trauma, even things like IVs, getting multiple IVs, sometimes multiple IVs put in a day. Mm-hmm. And thinking about, even as an adult, if you've had an IV,
yeah,
they hurt.
They do, yeah.
You know, they hurt and they're scary.
Yeah.
They're scary. And to have a tiny, you know, 1.5 pound baby experience that, that's very frightening. And just things like when they draw blood, they often yeah. will do like a heel stick where they pinch the child's heel and then they take the needle and poke, mm-hmm. poke the child's heal and then squeeze it until they get enough blood.
Right.
There's things like that, that's important. They need to be able right. to do that. They right. have to save that child's life.
Right.
In my case, to save my child's life, they right. had to do these procedures that were scary and painful in and mm-hmm. of themselves, not to mention just whatever the medical concerns were that cause right. sickness and pain as well. So for some babies, that's their start in life.
Mm-hmm.
Their start is not, you know, those sweet moments of connection and attachment
yeah.
with, you know, newborn baby and mom. Their start in life is not being able to breathe on their own and being whisked away to a NICU,
mm-hmm.
Being in an incubator in a, you know, a plastic box, essentially not
yeah.
being held. Sometimes babies are too unstable. They can't be held.
Right.
So not only are they experiencing these painful procedures, they're experiencing very significant attachment trauma.
Right.
Along with that, attachment trauma goes hand in hand with medical trauma for children.
Mm-hmm.
So there's long separations from their caregiver. Many babies are too unstable to touch for weeks at a time.
Right.
And so they're not having those critical attachment experiences
yeah.
in those first few weeks or sometimes months or even a year
yeah.
Of life. And that's very traumatizing to
yeah.
that child. They don't get that sense of security and safety mm-hmm. that babies need to have. For some children, they may have a better start to life than that.
Right.
And some medical issues can arise in the weeks or months following birth.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have, for some babies, I've known children who have severe food allergies.
Yeah.
And they're having all kinds of pain in their stomach, or they're having severe reflux. And they're having pain and burning in their digestive tract, in mm-hmm. their esophagus, in their throat. But no one knows. They think they're just colicky babies.
Right.
And so you have these babies with pain, and their parents are not able to comfort and soothe them.
Mm-hmm. And meet that need for
exactly,
them.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. They're not having their needs met by their parents. Now, these are well-meaning parents.
Oh, absolutely.
Parents that love their babies, parents that are trying their best, parents that are not neglectful, not mm-hmm. abusive. They're holding their babies, they're feeding their babies, they're nurturing their babies. But this baby is under so much pain and distress. Their brain is on high alert.
Mm-hmm.
Their brain is dysregulated. Their
yeah.
their brain is not able to accept the nurture. Their brain is just telling them, this is life or death. This caregiver is not meeting my need.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can imagine that's going to affect long-term the development of
right.
this child. And then we have other children who have things like accidents, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe a car accident
yep.
or
high fever,
yeah. absolutely, and a febrile seizure from
mm-hmm.
the fever. You
mm-hmm.
have kids who are, you know, riding their bicycles or playing on the monkey bars in a playground,
right.
and they fall and have a serious accident that ends up hospitalizing them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so medical trauma can happen at any time
right.
Through the lifespan. So even
sure.
adults can have medical
yeah,
trauma.
Absolutely.
We're kind of focusing more on the children
yeah.
yeah, right, today, but certainly medical trauma can happen at any time,
mm-hmm.
and it's really any kind of procedure or experience that involves medical professionals, and even just thinking about that aspect of it, you have these doctors and nurses who come in who are, again, very well-meaning.
Yes, absolutely.
These are people who got into it because they love children, they want to help children, they want to take care of children, but they have to do things. So you have a caregiver and a caregiver role, maybe
right.
a nurse or a doctor, come in. They're very nice. They're very pleasant. They're very kind.
Mm-hmm.
But then they do things that hurt the child.
Right.
You know, they give them shots. They put in IVs.
Mm-hmm.
They do all kinds of imaging and
yep.
MRIs and PET scans and CAT scans
mm-hmm.
and all the things that they're doing. And that's very confusing
yeah.
to a young child. Who do I trust?
Mm-hmm.
This person is so nice and kind, but then they hurt me.
Yeah. And they're maybe taking me away from my parents, or my parents can't come with me when I'm going to do these things.
And then when it's over, my parents still can't comfort and soothe me.
Right.
I'm still in pain.
Yeah.
So that creates all kinds of effects later on for that child.
Yeah.
That child as well.
Yeah. And you said so many things that, and we're going to touch on all of it. We have a really good outline of, you know, everything that you just kind of summarized, but I imagine this topic is actually probably pretty emotional for parents, because this is a huge, painful thing to watch your child go through and you not have control or can't comfort. And so we are going to touch on that a little bit later. But for, you know, anybody who's listening and says, I think we have are in this category, or we have experienced something along the lines, what are maybe, or maybe somebody who's saying, you know, I've never really thought that this is a trauma that our family has experienced. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, okay, yes, we did have a NICU stay, or, you know, actually our child did fall off the monkey bars and they had to have surgery to correct the bone. And that was, again, something that was healed them. They were able to go on and play. But now that I think about it, there has been a shift in my child's maybe demeanor or, you know, security to maybe go back to the playground, or, you know, anything. So what are maybe some clues for some parents that are saying, I have a light bulb going off and I think I need to look into this a little bit more. What are some clues for those parents?
I think the first thing is just to think about your child's history. And as a parent, if you're a biological parent, you hold that history. And so you know the big milestones, you know, the events of your child's life. So just even thinking back, you know, what was the birth like? What was the pregnancy like? You know, did for the mother, did the mother have a highly, you know, medicalized pregnancy?
Right.
Was there a hospital stay for the mother? Did the mother have any serious illnesses that can cause trauma for that preborn child?
Right.
They're very much aware and they're very much affected by the trauma experiences and the stress responses of the mother while they're still in utero. So thinking about that, thinking about after birth, did the parent or did the child get to stay with their parents? Were they separated? Did they have to go to the NICU? Have there been surgeries? Have there been significant illnesses? So looking at just the history, first of all, now for biological parents, that's easy, as I mentioned. But for foster parents, for adoptive parents, sometimes that's not so simple.
Right.
You know, sometimes those kids come with a pretty good history. And
you know,
okay, so this was a child born to a mother who was on drugs. This child was exposed to substances in utero. That's a big hint. Or this child spent, you know, a couple of weeks in the hospital. Anything like that. If you hear those things, if this child had significant physical abuse that required medical attention, that's going to be another clue for you. If there's anything that tells you maybe there wasn't prenatal care, any of those, you're kind of putting on your detective hat, which we ask parents to do all the time, right?
Yeah,
put on that detective hat, and kind of look back at that history and just tease apart some things that, well, I wonder if this could be, I wonder if this caused the child to have to go to the doctor or go to a hospital or be hospitalized or have any medical procedures done. That's one thing you can look at, is just the history. And then you take a look at, so we know that there's significant history for medical trauma. Was my child actually traumatized by it? Because that's the other thing, is that we know that the human brain is miraculous, and God has designed the human brain to withstand quite a bit of trauma.
Sure.
You know, life, going through life, you will experience trauma. For some brains, for some nervous systems, and for some people, they're able to kind of skate through it, and they have this resiliency, and they don't have some of the effects of trauma. And there's a lot of factors that go into why some people have resilience and some
and
people
don't. Right.
And most people don't.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, that's a different topic.
We're just going to add that to another time.
Yeah, absolutely. But for most people, there's going to be some effects. So does my child have effects? Well, let's take a look at some of the things. Do you notice the child struggles with authority, struggles with your authority, struggles with teachers, or anyone in authority, which includes doctors, medical professionals? Is that something that you're seeing? Do you see a child who has a fear response? Are they hypervigilant? Are they always kind of on edge? Or do they have times that they have hypervigilance? Times that they're on edge. Do you see a higher sensitivity to pain in general? Do you see just some of these symptoms that really are the same for any kind of trauma, really.
Yeah.
And some of the attachment trauma, do they have some separation anxiety that mm-hmm. isn't developmentally appropriate? It's there. Maybe this is a child who's maybe a little bit too old for the typical, you know, separation right. anxiety that children go through that is normal and appropriate. That may be another clue too. So is this yeah. child have mm-hmm. a lot of anxiety?
Yeah.
Does this child have a lot of worries about their body or about their health? Just any of those kinds of things that may be a clue to.
That's really good and really helpful.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll say just to touch on, you know, from a foster parent's perspective, we've had two kiddos in our home who have come to us after just being hospitalized. And I think probably one of the hardest things for me to personally, you know, deal with and have to really process is knowing that they were removed from their bio family and put in the hospital. So they're experiencing abandonment mm-hmm. and then a hospitalization where they don't really have anybody.
Yeah.
And then here is a new person coming to pick them up. So even just thinking of that for our foster or adoptive families yeah. out there, that if you know, if you're picking a child up from the hospital, this is probably something to mm-hmm. do your best to get that release of information sign. You talk to that hospital staff yes. and try to find everything that you can, knowing that
yeah.
we have multiple traumas happening at the same time.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Ask what procedures were done.
Right.
Ask what were the child's symptoms. Mm-hmm. Ask, you know, is this, number one, does this child have pain during this time?
Yes.
And is he still in pain?
Right.
Is he still in pain?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was something I experienced with my own son, that after he was, you know, he was hospitalized in the NICU for 7.5 weeks, came out, and he was still in significant pain, mm-hmm. but I didn't know. And so for a few weeks after that, he still experienced pain that I couldn't comfort him.
Yeah.
I couldn't help him. I couldn't soothe him. So he had that internalized message that mom couldn't help me. Yeah. Mom didn't meet my wow. need. So I would ask, is this child in pain still? Don't take it for granted that this is just a cranky baby or mm-hmm. a colicky baby mm-hmm. or even just, well, he separated from his biological mom, which is traumatic and reason right. to cry. Uh-huh. Don't get me wrong, reason to right. cry. But you, if you've picked your child up from the hospital, there may be additional reasons that this child is crying, that this child is so right. fussy or yeah. colicky or
yeah.
in clear distress.
Yeah.
And so, you know, advocate, find out.
Right. No, that's so good. So, and that kind of helps us go into this next portion really well and talking about the impact mm-hmm. that these experiences have, one, on the child.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter if they are a newborn to a mm-hmm. 18-year-old or, like you said, even adult. We know that our bodies remember our trauma. Yes. So even if you can't verbally share it, we know that. Research yes. tells us that it has an impact on us, maybe mm-hmm. some more than others. But so let's talk about the impact that a medical trauma can have on a child, but also a parent. Because again, yes. I'm hearing you share your story. I have some kids in my home mm-hmm. who we've had to navigate some medical stuff and talk about that mom guilt, that dad guilt, and just feeling yeah. so powerless when this is a child that you would sacrifice anything for,
absolutely.
Die for, you know, and then here you are in this situation. So talk about mm-hmm. both of those. I don't know if you want to talk about the parents first or the child, but we're going to touch on both of those.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about the child first. I think for the child, there's a wide variety of effects that medical trauma can have. Mm-hmm. When thinking about just how trauma affects the brain, and
right.
medical trauma does affect the brain in very, very similar aspects as a regular trauma, any kind of trauma, attachment trauma,
sure.
any type of trauma does, but it changes on the neurobiological level. It changes the way that the body responds to stress. That's number
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
And so you have a child who's on hyper alert all of the time. This is a child who is always waiting for pain to start again,
mm-hmm.
does not feel safe.
Right.
You have children who developed this innate lack of trust in their parents, mm-hmm. in their caregivers, because their body remembers, caregivers don't help me.
Mm-hmm.
Caregivers do not meet my needs.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, sometimes caregivers might have been the one holding the child down mm-hmm. in a hospital bed
yes.
while the procedures it's were happening. Being done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so parents can be a part of the trauma
mm-hmm.
unwittingly. Mm-hmm. And it's not, again, parents, we're not wanting to do that.
No.
Yeah. And having the parent there is still better
right.
than not being there. Don't hear me wrong and think that I'm saying parents shouldn't
absolutely,
be
right.
there in the hospital or in the doctor's office when children are having painful procedures. They should be. But sometimes that body will remember it a little bit differently
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
will remember the parent being a part of the trauma. And so there is just this mistrust. And so sometimes kids are labeled with like defiance when No, it's not defiance. It is a lack of trust. It is fear.
Right.
It is not, you know, obstinate defiance disorder. It's not ODD. It's it's not a child who is being mean or disrespectful. You hear that a lot. They're disrespectful. It's a child who's afraid of pain.
Right.
Is afraid of suffering and will do anything possible not to suffer anymore.
Right.
And that's what you're really seeing. It can affect their ability even later on in life to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
These are adults who don't want to go to the doctor anymore. Mm-hmm. And now that they have, they're over 18, they don't have a parent taking them to the doctor. Right. They may not go to the doctor. They may not go to the dentist. They may not take care of their bodies. They may have a significant dissociation from their bodies.
Right.
The other thing that's always kind of interesting is you think that when there's been a lot of pain that, okay, well, they'll be desensitized to pain or maybe they'll develop a higher tolerance to pain. But what studies have shown, what research shows, is it's actually the opposite. So people who've had chronic pain, who've had medical trauma, they actually have a lower tolerance for pain. So this may be the child that's like constantly hurting, who's always telling you about their boo-boos, who overreacts, who has these big reactions to a bump or a bruise or a little bitty scratch.
Right.
Because that's a child who is experiencing significant pain. Not only do they have the pain of whatever the scratch is, and it's just sometimes it's a fear response, sometimes they are seeking out nurture from a caregiver, but then also their body is reenacting the pain
that they experience
of their medical trauma.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So you see a lot of those kinds of effects that you wouldn't necessarily connect to medical trauma, but that definitely are connected to medical trauma.
And then
even thinking about for the parent, so you have two different types of parents that we've kind of talked about for parents who have taken placement of this child through foster care or through adoption. They may not have been there for the medical trauma. They might have been there for some of it.
Sure.
You know, if you have ongoing issues. But they may not have been there for the actual trauma itself, for the medical trauma. So they're confused. They're walking through some of this just through a fog. I know my child's hurting.
Right.
I don't know how to help them. I don't know why they're hurting.
Right.
Think of some parents who even were there in the delivery room when the birth mother gave birth to that child, and they take placement immediately, not understanding some of the issues with like substance exposure being traumatic. And so they're not able to understand even like where is this trauma coming from?
Right.
Where did it come from? So I think that's one of the things that we see with foster parents or adoptive parents is just a confusion.
Right.
And just a lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
We just don't always have the child's history.
Right.
And that's really hard. You're walking blind through this journey trying to figure out and trying to explain to your child's their service professionals, their therapists, their psychiatrists, their teachers, or, you know, whoever they have, their counselors, trying to explain to them, like, why this is the way. And, you know, I know therapists, they always ask, what are the triggers?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What causes? I don't know.
Yeah.
What's the child's trauma been? I don't know. You know, we just don't know. So I think that's really definitely a powerless feeling when you just don't have the information. You have a lot of training and education as foster parents or as adoptive parents. You've read the books and taken the trainings and you talk to other professionals. So we understand, but you don't always know exactly how your child's own history is expressing these issues.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have the history.
Right. And I think it's easy to even sometimes, and I've, you know, gotten caught in this too, where the frustration then gets turned and pointed at the child when you don't have the information because, like you said, it's, are they just wanting my attention all the time? Are they upset that I'm hanging out with this other child? And so now we have a boo-boo, and it's all these things. And then, lo and behold, maybe you get more info as the case goes on, and then it's that, oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
I have dismissed actual physical pain that my child's experienced, and it's just it's awful. So
exactly, it is. It's a terrible feeling.
Yeah,
I think for biological parents, it's some ways a little bit different, but some of those are very similar as well. But for biological parents, they may have experienced trauma as well, walking this journey with their child.
Yeah,
I know from my own experience, standing witness to my son fight for his life.
Yeah.
You know, as a 2-pound baby in the NICU, he had to fight for his life. And there was nothing I could do.
Yeah.
I just stood witness. There were times I wasn't allowed to touch him.
couldn't comfort him. I couldn't do the one thing that parents are supposed to do.
Yeah.
Was not allowed to feed him. He was fed through a tube. Was not allowed to hold him. Mm. I couldn't do those things.
Yeah.
And to watch, to see him clearly struggling and not be able to do anything. Mm-hmm. And all of the times that, you know, his life was in danger, to experience that as a parent, it's highly traumatic. Mm-hmm. And it affects how you parent. It affects how you view your child, even years forward. My son is now an adult, and he has given me permission to talk about his story. He would like to have more people understand medical trauma and understand physical disabilities that can sometimes result from them as well because of how it's experienced, you know, or how it's affected his life and how that experience has been for him. But for and that's something he and I have discussed and talked about as, you know, adult to adult now. We've talked about those experiences. But there were years as a parent that my comfort level in parenting and my feelings about parenting were absolutely affected by these early weeks of, you know, hospitalizations and then even years of surgeries and disability. And that's something that I had to deal with counseling.
Little
plug for counseling. I think it's really important for parents who have experienced their child's medical trauma.
Oh, yes.
Get some help.
Yeah.
Make sure that you have a support system that understands what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to a counselor about it. This is hard stuff.
Right.
This is definitely hard stuff to experience your child's suffering and not be able to do anything about it.
Oh, but how validating too for those that are listening who have gone through, you know, something similar to you, Jenny, because I think you do parent differently, right?
Yes.
And I think sometimes with people have good intentions, but maybe they notice that and they say you're being, you know, I've met with a couple of parents that are like been told that maybe their parenting is too soft or they don't provide enough structure, and they have no idea what that family has experienced.
Exactly.
They have no idea that this relationship was, you know, there was so much danger or all these different circumstances.
Yeah.
And I think that, so what you just said, I feel like just brings so much validation and compassion to our families who are saying we were in survival mode. And now that maybe we've come out of that situation, I'm just reliving it all the time.
Exactly.
And anytime I see my child go off with maybe a babysitter or a grandparent, it's
go to school.
I'm flooded with fear again. So I think that's just something that I think needs to be talked about a lot
more.
And also for our foster families, too, who also have a parenting approach that's different. It's the same thing. So I'm really glad that we had a chance to, you know, spend time discussing this openly.
Yeah.
So
You know, we talk a lot about a child acting out of that survival brain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm here to tell you that parents can act out of survival brain as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And so anytime you see your child running or playing or swimming or, you know, there's a little catch to your breath.
Yeah.
And when you know that children die, that children don't always breathe on their own.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that firsthand knowledge, you parent differently.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And now that can really be a detriment to your parenting if you don't take care of it yourself.
Exactly. Which again,
and learn
encouraging
to regulate.
The counseling.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, get some help.
You know,
and you don't have to always be afraid in parenting.
Right.
I will say that too. You can enjoy parenting again. You really can. You just need to get some help to process through what your parenting experience has been parenting a child with medical trauma.
Yeah.
It is no joke.
And it's out there and it's available, and there
Absolutely.
Are people that can assist in that. And, you know, even for maybe any of our Christian viewers too, having that biblical truth too to hold on to, which is hard to do at times as well. I'm not saying that it's easy to just be like, okay, God, they're your children too. I'm not saying it's easy at all, but and another thing that I think is a blessing if, you know, you can seek that out as well.
Definitely. Yeah. When you can rest in the knowledge, in the true knowledge, not just the head knowledge, because I know we have the head knowledge, but in the heart knowledge that God held your baby when you couldn't.
Mm. See, so it gives me chills when you say that.
When you have that, when you can rest in that peace, that changes everything. And you can really trust God with your child's care.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I couldn't. I couldn't feed my baby. I couldn't hold my baby. I couldn't heal him. I couldn't take away his suffering.
But he was there.
But God was there.
Yeah.
And not only did I stand witness, but we serve
We serve a Savior who stood by my child's bedside, who held him when I couldn't, and continues to hold him and develop him and heal my child's heart and heal my child's medical trauma as well. I think that's powerful.
Oh, yeah.
That's a powerful source of healing when you can truly, truly rest in that, that peace, knowing, you know, Jesus, our Savior, he was there through us.
Yeah, and there with you, too, in the midst of all that. So,
He held me, too.
Yeah,
he held
me, too. So beautiful, too. And even how your story was probably a witness and testimony to the nurses and doctors and all the people that met with your little guy at the time and got to experience you, too, and just your heart for the Lord. So that's amazing. So we're going to talk about triggers kind of following medical trauma. And then from there, we're just going to talk about maybe ways that people can seek out treatment. We've hinted at it a couple of times. We've encouraged it. So we're going to talk about that a little bit before we close. But yeah, I'm just going to let you kind of open the space for triggers years after a medical trauma.
Oh, yeah. They're ongoing triggers. Ongoing triggers, I think thinking about triggers, there's really two categories of triggers. There's really the obvious, explicit triggers that you can really draw the line to the medical trauma. So now maybe it's twice a year when you take your child to the dentist, it's an event, right? It's an event.
Yes.
And that child's going to struggle. And you may have serious behaviors before, during, and after.
Right.
You may have signs of anxiety, aggression. You may have a child who's just shut down, thinking about that dissociated shutdown that, that some children get, or the dissociated aggression that other children get. So whatever their trauma response is, you may see that before, during, and after medical procedures. I remember with my son, who is the sweetest child in the world, and no one who knew him would even believe me when I would tell people what he was acting like at a doctor's office.
Yes.
They wouldn't even believe me because he is just the most precious, polite young man that you would ever meet, except
going to the
at the doctor's office.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's had many surgeries since. It did not end as a baby. And he continues to have ongoing medical care that he will have for the rest of his life due to the effects of prematurity. But as a child, this young man, I think the worst would be when he had to get x-rays done or imaging done, MRIs done. He would, he'd go in like a fighter.
Yeah.
He would fight those, especially the radiologists. Oh, he had a special hatred in his heart for x-ray technicians.
Oh,
and he would call them names.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He would not cooperate. It was a fight. There was a time he was getting an MRI done, and he just left the MRI tube and ran in his little hospital robe through the hallways of Phoenix Children's Hospital.
Oh, no, he was done.
Screaming. Oh. Yeah, just he was done.
Yeah.
There were times he would fight, kick, bite nurses. I mean, he was just, he was a little
It was not
fire.
For him.
No.
Don't blame him.
It was not for him. It was not for him. He actually, in physical therapy was another one that he's had off and on throughout his life and will continue. That was another experience. He would threaten the lives of the physical therapist, the physical therapist's wife, and his baby.
Oh, yeah.
As a 12-year-old child, he did that. And just as a parent, I would sit there just like, I absolutely knew, as a, not only as a parent, but as a trauma therapist.
Yes.
I 100% knew where this was coming from.
100%,
100% knew. I knew this was a trigger, and I would try to always explain it to people. And I would work, like, overtime to tell them, he's really a sweet boy. In fact, I did it just a minute ago. I told you all.
Yes.
Right? I told you, he's the most polite young man you'll ever meet.
Yes.
I'm, you know, always trying to cover for some really terrible behavior. But I would recognize, I understood.
Yeah.
100% understood.
Yeah. And it was valid why he was doing that.
Yes, this was a direct trigger and an obvious trigger for his medical trauma. Yeah. All of the painful experiences he's had, physical therapy is painful.
Yeah.
Even as an adult, if you've had physical therapy, it's good. The results are good. It's important.
It hurts. And they make you work.
Yes, it's miserable. So for this child who's had nothing but pain in these kinds of offices, it's terrible.
Yes.
It's terrible. And it would bring up just the absolute worst in him. So those are some really obvious ones. But even things like thinking about brushing teeth, you know, depending on the medical trauma that they've had, or illnesses, when you have a child who has a sore throat, thinking about what that sore throat may awaken in the body for a child who's been intubated, where they've had that ventilator tube down into their throat. Those are very similar sensations. And so you may have all kinds of old medical trauma that's just reawakened when the child is sick, which just seems like this is just a common cold, right? Mm-hmm. Think about some of our foster kids and children adopted through foster care. You hear over and over again, every time my child is sick, it's like meltdown city.
Yeah.
It's constant meltdowns. And they're just sick. It's just a cold.
Yeah.
Think, what is this awakening? What is this feeling of maybe helplessness or the feeling of illness, the feelings in their body, the feeling of the fever and the aches in their body? What is that awakening for them?
Right.
What old medical trauma is that awakening? Those are sometimes very obvious lines that you can draw to triggers.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And then there's triggers that aren't so obvious.
Right.
There's times that it's like, I don't know why. Where did that come from? I'm thinking of my son again, who gave me permission to share every story I'm sharing. He gave me permission to share.
I love it. That's amazing.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories about a not so obvious trigger is when I took him to the DMV to get his learner's permit because he was learning to drive, and you know they have to take your picture.
Yeah.
So he stood on this little platform they had with the camera in front, and he would not sit still. I think he was actually 16 years old when he got his permit, would not stand still for the camera, he kept moving his glasses up and down, kept wiggling around, kept turning his eye. Every time the person would try to take the picture, he would turn his face. we kept going through this. Like it took probably about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. He started snapping at the poor DMV worker who, you know, was doing his job and actually was very, very patient.
Yeah.
He struggled to get this picture taken. And the picture, we ended up just taking the best picture we could.
Sure.
And it was the best we could get. And it's still, every time I look at that picture, I laugh. And I was a little bit frustrated as a parent. I was I'm like, come on.
Smile for the photo and stay still. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just take the picture.
Yeah.
You want to get your permit.
Like, right.
This is for you. Why are you not willing to take this picture? And after we were done, we left and I was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he said, Mom, it's like an X-ray. And that's when it dawned on me, the platform that he was standing on. He was behind this background, the camera in front of him. Mm-hmm. It was like an X-ray. Now, thankfully, he had the insight at this point. After some counseling and, you know, living with a counselor mom and all the processing, the verbal processing we've done with it, he had the insight to be able to say this was a medical trauma trigger.
Yeah.
Most kids
don't.
Yeah, and there's other ones that he's had. There's times walking across the stage for his high school graduation, walking across the stage for various reasons at church. He's actually in theater, so he's had many times walking on the stage. There's been times that he's been highly triggered and he becomes belligerent. It's the same kind of effect every time. He's a little fighter.
Yeah,
that's his trauma response. Yeah. But he's been able to identify that all of the times that he has a lot of muscular skeletal issues due to his effects of prematurity and the disability that he has. And he's had so many times he's had to walk hallways in front of physical therapists, in front of surgeons, in front of doctors.
Yep.
And they're watching his gait. They're watching how his legs move, how his body reacts when he's moving. So he's had people staring at him walking, staring at his disability.
Yeah.
So the times when he feels like people are staring at him walking, even though he likes to be on stage, he likes the attention.
Yeah.
I tell you, he's a performer for sure.
Yeah.
But there's sometimes there's little aspects of it that he's walking on a stage and he's highly triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he's able to draw the lines for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have drawn those lines,
even
though I've watched him experience the medical trauma that he's experienced. I, as a parent, as a trauma therapist parent to boot, I have not been able to draw those lines. And yet he now has been able to. So for parents, I think it's important to recognize and to have the humility to say, I think there might be some behaviors that my child has that are actually responses to medical trauma triggers.
Yeah.
They're not obvious. And my child can't tell me. It happened in this preverbal time. So they don't have the words for the memory. Mm-hmm. But they absolutely hold those memories in their body. And their bodies are reacting to this unknown
Right.
Implicit trigger.
Yeah. And I think hearing you say that, knowing that here you are a therapist, you're experiencing this same thing. I'm a therapist. I have foster, you know, care training, and I still make, you know, choices. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I totally missed, you know.
Missed it.
Yeah, missed it. Totally but missed it. If anything, it actually gives me hope, though, too, that we can do the detective work. And as parents, we are capable. And it's okay if we make mistakes. There's no perfect parent. Yeah. And actually, we know that even if we make a mistake and we talk with our child about it, it's another opportunity for us to connect. But I think even hearing you talk, even though this is such a sensitive topic and one that's maybe really painful for people to listen to or discuss, there is hope in this and saying, okay, now maybe I'm being encouraged, or this is, again, kind of helping me see, oh, we do have some clues, or there have been some things that make me note, okay, maybe this is a medical trauma, but there's so much hope in that, because then we know the source. And then from there, as a family, we can do that detective work and move forward.
We can heal.
Yeah, we can heal. Mm-hmm. So I just think I'm just so thankful that you and your son are willing to share his story. So, and then just as we wrap up, what are some treatment options or maybe some sources or resources that you would encourage our parents to maybe look into for their kiddos?
Well, I'm a big believer in trauma therapy.
Yeah,
right?
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of like therapy a little bit. Really recommend it.
Yeah.
But no, I do. I think it's important to get therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to have not only, I think it's important for the child to have trauma therapy. I think it's important to have family therapy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is, even though this is a thing that happened to the child, it is a thing that happens to the family, and it happens within the family, to the family, in the family.
That secondary trauma. It's a real thing. It happens. Yes.
Yeah. And who's going to help deal with this trauma in your child? The parent.
Yeah.
Parents, you know, I love trauma therapists, but they're only with the child for 1 hour a month or a week.
Yeah.
You know, if they're lucky, sometimes only every other week, depending on the service. But parents are with the child every single day.
Yep.
Every single day. So there's a lot that the parents can do. So thinking about, even for parents, seeking out compassionate healthcare providers.
Yes.
I think that's
so
huge.
True.
Making sure your child's treatment team, their doctors, their nurses, their physical therapists, the dentists, whoever is on your child's team, making sure that they understand, my child has had a history of medical trauma. Now, that should be obvious. If you have a child with some long diagnoses and some issues, or, you know, my child has a very obvious physical disability, that should be obvious, and yet it's not. So making sure you advocate for your child. My child is having some effects of the medical trauma right now. He's being triggered by this medical environment.
Right.
And advocating, please help calm and regulate my child.
Mm-hmm.
Please provide the most calming, healing environment that we can here.
Yeah.
Are there things that the medical providers can do to help deal with this in the moment?
Right.
To have compassion and empathy for this child. I think that's really, really important.
Right.
And really advocating for the very best medical care for your child. Parents are the best advocate. Yeah. And that includes foster parents, adoptive parents, DCS caseworkers who are acting as that guardian and making like actual medical decisions for this child.
Right.
They are able to really advocate for this child, and children need it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not able to advocate for themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something even my adult child is learning now, and I've kind of passed the baton to him, is this is how you advocate for yourself, and you've seen me do it all of these years, and here you go. This is your turn now. But for children, for underage children, parents need to advocate. I think parents, and this was the takeaway that my son wants our audience to have, is have compassion for your child.
Mm.
They can't always control their trauma responses. They can't control the pain that they're in, and they're tired of the pain.
Yes.
They're tired of having to deal with this medical issue. They're tired of dealing with the effects of trauma. They're tired of being tired.
Yeah.
They're tired of the triggers. They're tired of all of it, and it's hard, and they can't always control it.
Mm-hmm.
So please have compassion on your children.
Yes.
Please be willing to walk alongside your child, even when it's painful for the parent, even when it's hard. And for parents, I know as a parent, it's a tiring journey too, and there's a lot that goes into it. But to continue to maintain that compassionate attitude for your child who has been suffering.
Yeah.
think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And I love that he gave you a takeaway to share.
Yep.
So you'll have to thank him for us for just being open to, you know, sharing a little part of his story. So, but I think that's such good advice. And, you know, as we've talked about, and it's not necessarily anybody's fault or, you know, I don't think people try to be harsh, but our kids get labeled a lot of times. And I think a lot of people mean well. They're trying to just maybe give advice or, you know, maybe something to try. But these, like you said, they have no idea maybe what physical or emotional pain that they're going through. And this is not a label. That is a symptom of something going on that's deep rooted in them. Exactly. And so really even for parents, helping your child see that, I think is empowering for them too, because it's exhausting to be labeled or told. Yeah. You know, I can think of one of, one of our girls hated the doctor's office, and you know, even just being told, sit still, sit still. You need to sit still. You need to listen, or I'm going to have mommy, you know, come talk to you. And it's and it's heartbreaking. And again, so talking about that compassion, but really just helping our kids see, you know what, sweet girl or buddy, they just, it's okay. You know, it's okay to have that. And they are just trying to do their job, but it's okay that you were angry or cussed them out or ran down the hall. It's okay. Yeah. This is hard. Adults struggle with this too. I think sometimes we need to empower our kids with that too.
Yes, absolutely.
That was me. If that was me, I probably would have kicked and bit them too, you know? So,
Yeah. And I think, you know, parents can do so much not to add more shame.
Yes.
You know, this is a child with so many behaviors, maybe. When it looks like a behavior, it's an effective trauma, but it looks like a behavior. And so a parent has a choice. I can act with empathy and compassion, and I can join my child in this pain and the suffering, or I can discipline.
Yeah.
I can create a consequence. And of course, it was tempting as my child threatened the life of the physical therapist baby.
Yeah, and that one you're probably like, oh boy, okay.
Oh no. You know, of course it's tempting to be like, what? You're, you know, you're grounded or you know, whatever.
Right, yeah.
Of course it's tempting to do that. But,
absolutely.
And this is the one of the few ways that my professional background was definitely a help to me.
Yeah,
because I understood that, no, punishing and consequencing, however you want to call it, was not going to help. This is a trauma trigger. And I chose to treat it and address it as such. I chose to have compassion. And we did a lot of pre-teaching before we would go into a medical appointment. I would make sure that I understood if there was any procedures happening. I understood exactly what was going to happen. Sometimes I would have like a child life specialist at the hospital talk to him first.
They're amazing.
Yes, or have the doctor talk to him first. You can schedule a doctor's appointment just to talk to the doctor and have the doctor talk to the child about what the procedure is going to be, you know, later on.
Right.
And or talk to the nurse or whoever it is that's going to be able to best explain it to your child so they understand right away what's going to go, what's going to happen, what's going to go on. Come prepared with some kind of coping mechanism, whether that's fidget toys, favorite stuffed animal, blanket, comfy pajamas, whatever the comfort items for your child. And then, you know what? I'm not above a bribe.
Yeah.
And the bribe is not if you do good. If you're good for your doctor's appointment, I'll get you a treat. It's after.
Right.
It doesn't matter how it goes down.
Yeah.
After, we're going to go stop and get you a treat or pick up that toy you've been wanting or whatever, go to the park, go to see a movie, whatever it is. After the thing, you're going to get what you want. You're going to get a treat. I don't think that that's a bad thing at all.
Nope,
and it's something you can continue to put in front of them. Remember, and again, it's not conditional. It's we're going to do this and then we're going to get this.
Yes.
So let's make it through this
appointment.
We're not
holding this over our kid. It is something that will be happening.
Yes. This is just, I'm doing this for you because I know this is hard.
Yeah.
And then reminding them, these are words that you can use to let me know that this is too much. This is how you tell the doctor to slow down with the procedure. This is too painful in this moment. You advocate for them, even if it's like, okay, so give me the signal when you want the doctor to take a pause.
Right.
Okay, what's the signal? You squeeze my hand three times and then I'll advocate for you.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell the doctor, can you take a pause? My son needs a chance to take a breath or have some cold water or just breathe through this. And you're able to advocate. So you do all of that preparation ahead of time.
Yeah, that's
great. Very, very helpful. And then making sure that that there's pain medication on board, making sure you advocate for every possible comfort
yes. that the doctor or the dentist can provide. It's, yeah, I do want to pay extra for laughing gas mm-hmm. if my child has to have even just a dental cleaning, maybe, mm-hmm. if some of their medical trauma has something to do with mouth.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, if that's going to yeah. make it difficult, then, yeah, I will pay the extra money to have laughing gas. Or maybe they need to actually be sedated for this procedure, and yeah. I'm gonna pay to have that done, or I'm going to advocate, like, I need this done for my child, that, you know, whenever my child, my adult child now, whenever he has MRIs now or significant imaging, mm-hmm. he has to be actually sedated and even put to sleep mm-hmm. for those procedures, because yes. his nervous system just can't take it.
He can't handle it.
Yeah. Can't take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I know what works for him.
Right.
And he knows what works for him. And we will explain that to the doctor, and we'll go as slow as we need to go. And I make sure that he has doctors who will work with us, who partner with us,
yes.
and who did not dismiss his pain. Mm-hmm. Don't dismiss me as his parent.
Right.
Advocating for him, that we can all be pulling together to make those experiences as, you know, as painless as possible.
Right.
And that at the very least, his pain is validated.
Yeah.
And that he knows, I hear you. Mm. I hear you. I see you. I know this thing is necessary. We have to have this procedure.
Right.
We have to have this surgery. But I'm here with you in this, and I'm going to do everything in my power to minimize your suffering through this.
Yeah.
And you are not alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm here with you.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's such good advice. Well, thank you so much for, you know, touching on this topic. I feel like there's a lot of little things that we talked about that we could even, you know, add for another time. But
hours.
Yeah, right? We could talk for hours about all this stuff, honestly. But if you're listening today and this applies to your family, or you were inspired to maybe seek out some maybe counseling or resources for your family, or this was just something that made you feel hopeful, right? That there are others out there mm-hmm. who have the same experiences or similar experiences and the same feelings that come with medical trauma that maybe your child has experienced. We encourage you to come to our website, take a look at some other resources we have at Arizona Family Counseling. But Jenny, thanks so much for coming and talking about
this. Thank you, Haley. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Care Learning Podcast. If you found this content helpful or encouraging, please click that subscribe button and give us a review, or share this with other families that might enjoy this type of content. Just a reminder, we have the full video of this podcast on our YouTube channel. And if you're a foster parent that needs continuing education credits, you can check us out at familycarelearning.org, where we have an entire catalog of foster care training courses. Family Care Learning is made possible by the donations from listeners like you. If you wish to support the work we do in strengthening families, feel free to make a tax-deductible donation at familycarelearning.org. Thank you.